in control. And secondly, we know he's in control because of his power. The Bible says in Psalms 115:3, but our God is in the heavens, and he hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. You know, we talked about this. I'm going to mention it again. We're entering into the time of the Gentiles here in Daniel chapter number and with Nebuchadnezzar. Up to this point in time, God was using the nation of Israel, was using the Jewish nation. They were supposed to be the light. They were supposed to be the ones to show all the other nations around them. If you live for God, God will bless you. We've been learning about that in Sunday school class. And you know what happens here? Now it's transitioning. There is no longer a Jerusalem. It's been pummeled. It's left. Nebuchadnezzar has destroyed it because they kept on rebelling from him. And it's not. There is no throne. No, there is no more king in Jerusalem at that moment in time. And remember in the book of Habakkuk, they talked about how God was going to use a Gentile king. And remember in the Mount Olivet discourse, it talked about how Jesus used this phrase, the time of the Gentiles. That's the time and day that we live in today. It takes you all the way from Nebuchadnezzar all the way to the throne of Jesus Christ, where Jesus Christ comes. And that's what the time of the Gentiles are. The Gentiles are the one that's in the rule. The Gentiles, it talks about even in Romans, how the fullness of the Gentiles talks about from a spiritual aspect, that God is using even Gentiles today to carry out his message. And we see how God is working, making this all work. In Nebuchadnezzar's day, the message of the gospel could have never gotten out because they didn't have any Romans. They didn't have any common language. But now we see as these kingdoms, in the last kingdom we're going to see that represents the legs is Rome. What did Rome do? They built roads. What did Rome do? They had a common language. They made the opportunity. When Jesus says, go into all the world, no other time before Rome could they really ever accessibly enter onto all the world until Rome came along. And this is part of God's plan. This is part of God's purpose. God is in control of everything. He's step by step. He allows this to happen. What's he trying to do? He's bringing his Savior, his Son, into the world, and he is giving it to the whole world, not to just the Jewish nation. So I want you to remember, God is in control. We're going to see here that God tells this Gentile man. Why is he telling a Gentile king? Because it's the time of the Gentiles. And he's telling this Gentile king what is going to happen. And we see here, he gives him this vision. The second thing, God has everything under control. Second thing is, God is worthy of our faith. God is worthy of our faith. It's going to be kind of neat here tonight. You're going to see Daniel. You know, you got Nebuchadnezzar up there. No one else can answer the dream. We saw that, how Nebuchadnezzar sat on the throne and said, Daniel, can you really interpret this dream? Because he's skeptical. All these guys that make all this money, that's supposed to be smarter than Daniel, you know, higher up in this, they couldn't help him. And then this one little Jewish guy comes along and says, oh, I know the answer. Nebuchadnezzar is like, sure you do. And he says, can you answer this dream? And, you know, Daniel says, you know, there's a God in heaven that can answer the dream. But what does this have to do with that God is worthy of our faith? Well, see, this is what Daniel is going to teach Nebuchadnezzar. You know, Nebuchadnezzar can't even remember his dream. He's sitting on the throne looking for someone to tell him. But when Daniel begins to describe it, can you imagine his face? He starts remembering this what the Bible calls a terrible image, talking about the awesomeness of it, the fearless-looking image it has, and strikes fear in Nebuchadnezzar's heart. And he says, you know what? And as Daniel begins to describe, he's like, that's right, that's right. And if I'm Nebuchadnezzar, I'm scared half to death. I'm shaking in my boots because of the fact that this guy is standing in front of me, is interpreting, is telling me a dream. I need to listen to what this guy is telling me. I need to hear what he's saying. There's something special about this guy. And what does Daniel do? He says, it ain't me, it's God. And see, God's worthy of our faith. No one else could do that. Remember we talked about all those other soothsayers, all those other magicians, all this. No one else is worthy of our faith. God is worthy of our faith. And that word worthy is interesting. Daniel's living in a pagan land. And you say, well, I don't know if I really can trust God. You don't understand the hardship I'm going through. Daniel's living in a pagan land, hundreds of miles away. He's been captured. He is a slave. They're trying to make a eunuch out of him. And that is, we won't even go into that. But that is, it's a rough road that Daniel has. But Daniel says, God deserves my faith. And God begins to bless him. And God's able to stand before the most powerful man maybe to ever live and say, let me introduce you to my God. I mean, what a wonderful story. You see how God works out these details. He's worthy of your faith. Think of some of these verses that talk about how he's worthy. I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. He's worthy of our faith because he can save us from our enemies. In Revelation 4:11, thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things. For thy glory they are and were created. Once again, everything was made by him. If anybody's worthy of our praise, if anybody's worthy of our faith, it's God. Remember, he's the one that has the foreknowledge. Remember, he's the one that has the power. You think about another verse. It talks about in Colossians 3:10 that we might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. It's saying that we can walk worthy of the God of the universe. We can live a life that's honoring and pleasing to him, and it's worthy. There's a worth to our life. There's a purpose to our life. There's nothing greater than we can do with our life than give it to God. You think of Ephesians 4:1, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech ye that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called. What does that mean? That you walk worthy of the job that God has given you. Think about that. We can actually walk worthy of it. God is worthy of our praise. I can walk worthy of the job that God's given me. You know, God's counted us faithful, and he's placed us in a ministry. I know Paul talked about that and the ministry he had, but we all should not faint because we all have a ministry. God doesn't save any of us to do nothing. We can walk worthy of that. And we think about that, and sometimes people bestow honors upon us and we're like, we're not worthy. You know, we don't deserve this attention. We don't deserve this praise. We don't deserve any of this. And that's it's trying to be humble. As long as it's sincere, I agree. I don't really like it when people try to compliment me or try to do things. But there's a God in heaven that deserves our praise. He is worthy of our faith. He is worthy of our trust. He's worthy of us. You know, we're not worthy of him, but he is worthy for us to do anything we want. And you think about in this story here, you're going to see Daniel proven to Nebuchadnezzar. Doesn't even give Nebuchadnezzar a chance to answer. You're going to see here in a second. He says, this is the dream, and here's the interpretation of it. He doesn't give Nebuchadnezzar a chance to respond. He's like, here's the dream, and he says, we will tell you the interpretation, talking about him and his three buddies there. We're going to tell you. And so he goes right into it. And last but not least, God has a wonderful plan for us. God has a wonderful plan for us. You hear the story, and you see this great big image, but most of us don't remember that there's a stone that's cut without hands that comes and busts this image up pretty good. And it talks about when Jesus Christ is coming back and how all the other kingdoms will be put subdued and everything else will be gone, and that Jesus Christ will sit on the throne and reign for this 1,000 years, and it's an eternal throne that Satan will try to come and attack it. And it's saying that there's a plan, there's a future here. Yes, the time of the Gentiles is here. Yes, there is a world empire that's from Babylon and from the Medes and Persians and from the Greeks and the Romans, and then we see the kingdoms that are divided today amongst the representation of the toes, and we see all this going on. But there is still a day because God's still in control and God has a plan and he's worthy of our faith and we should trust in him. But he's got wonderful things planned for us. I got the privilege of going to Ricky Powers' funeral today, and Pastor Parker did a good job at preaching. The singing was wonderful. The service was wonderful. And he talked about heaven a little bit. Made me want to go there. He talks about it, being excited about being going there. And he's got something wonderful planned for us. I mean, I know times can be hard and times can be tough, but he's got something. Think about it. He's got eternity with God. We got heaven. We got no more pain, no more tears, no more. You know, that's what Daniel, and you see in this story, and as you read, and we're going to be looking at a lot of prophecies later on in the chapters. And once again, I've told you, I'm not too familiar with preaching about prophecy things, and we're going to be experiencing these things together for the first time and some of this stuff. It's amazing the plan that God has for us, you know. But when you think about it, when you go through this and you read this and say, you know what, this was written before there was ever a Mede Persian Empire, before there was ever a Greek Empire, before there was ever a Roman Empire, before there was ever the division in the Roman Empire, it was all written hundreds, if not thousands, of years beforehand. And even Nebuchadnezzar was written in Jeremiah, you know, before he was probably ever even born. It talks about Nebuchadnezzar, and it talks about the Medes and Persians. It even makes a reference to the Greeks later on in the Bible. You know, this is all written ahead of time. God is in control. He has that foreknowledge. He knows what's going on. So when we consider a prophecy, it is cool to speculate, and it's cool to see how it worked all out. But let's not miss the application part. You know, he is in control. He does know what's going on. Nothing takes him by surprise. He adapts his plan like we talked on Sunday morning. Does it mean he compromises? No. But he continues to work with people. And as people reject him, the Jewish nation rejected him, he adapted his plan and he brought in prophets. He allowed them to be a king. And he has adapted his plan and his purpose. Remember, before the foundation of the world, they knew all this was going to happen. And they still allowed it to go on. So let's go ahead and get to the passage of scripture here. I wanted to set the scene here. Remember, this king has subdued all his enemies. He's built a great city. He's living in the lap of luxury. He's really the first world emperor. And it's not a great country. It's a great city. He has huge walls, and he's done great things. He's conquered all that he knows to conquer. He's not being challenged right now. No one's coming to try to conquer his kingdom at this point in time. He's sitting there. I want you to picture this guy. He pretty much rules the world. You know, so he's got pretty much everything at his disposal. Go kill all the magicians, all these wise men. You know, that's all he had to do is say, and they would go do it. Now, so I want you to picture this man. But then he has a dream. This dream terrifies him. This dream teaches him something, shows him something. And, you know, he wants to know what that dream was. He wants to understand that dream. God gives him this vision. And in walks in Daniel. Daniel, once again, God's looking for glory. Daniel's been taken from his nation. Daniel stands before the king. Who gets the glory? God does. And it's amazing how God works these things out. Let's get to the passages of scripture there. We could talk about how God works all the time for a long time, but we'll look here in we'll start in verse number 31. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. And it's talking about the intimidation, the fierceness of this image. Now, you can imagine this glowing image, because you see what it says, whose brightness was excellent. Not all these metals are bright. This is something that is a brightness, that is as if a glowing type thing here in this image. Now, it begins to describe the image. He doesn't begin to interpret the image yet. You see here in verse number 32, this image's head was of fine gold. His breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet a part of iron and part of clay. Now, you read that and you say, okay, who really cares? But if you don't miss the significance of it and you learn from the prophecy side of it, it's something that's worth learning. You see in verse number 34, thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and break them to pieces. So I want you to get the image here. Well, keep on reading verse number 35. Then was the iron and the clay, the silver and the gold, broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote them image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So we see here that this represents empires. But you got this great big figure here. And you got gold, you got silver, you got brass, you got iron. And this is a terrible image. This is not some type of little thing. This is something that's intimidating to the most powerful man to maybe ever live. And you got this stone that comes out of the sky. And it's a stone that's made without hands, it says, and comes in, it smashes at the feet of it. But it doesn't just stop there. It not only does it smash at the feet, and obviously if you hit the foundation of something, it's going to cause it to tumble. But this stone, it sounds like it kind of grinds it into almost a dust, into a chaff, and it's carried all away. This stone represents Jesus Christ. This stone represents what his kingdom is. When he comes, it's going to be as if there is no other kingdom. Or, you know, when Jesus comes, he's going to be the dictator. I mean, some people have this wrong image of Jesus Christ, but those 1,000 years, he's going to rule with iron. He's going to rule with rods of iron. You're not going to be able to break. You're going to have to listen to him. He's going to be a dictator. He is a loving, kind God. But in this millennial kingdom, he is going to be the one that reigns and rules on this earth. And I think people get the wrong image. Oh, God doesn't care what you do, and that's just not it. And you're going to see here that this kingdom is going to be fierce, and they're going to follow it, and it's going to be unlike any other kingdom. and for 1,000 years. That's what the stone is referring to here in verse. And you see how the chaff just blows it away. In verse number 36, as I mentioned earlier, Daniel doesn't give him a chance to respond. Daniel has got him here. You imagine if you're Nebuchadnezzar here. No one else can tell you this dream. No one else can tell you about this image. He's got him here. Nebuchadnezzar's on the edge of his seat. He's like, yeah, you're right. You're right. He said, I know it. That's it. That's what I saw. And Daniel's like, here. He says, he's turning the light on. What does Daniel do? He shows him God. He teaches him. Look. And you look here and says what it says in verse number 37. It says, well, verse number 36 was like, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Who is the we? I think he's talking about his three buddies. Thou, O king, art. Now notice that next word, or that next letter, A. You know, he's not the king of kings. You know, the king of the kings is a stone that's going to, he's showing him and teaching him that he is nothing compared to that stone. And you see how that, not only is that stone, you saw how it increased in verse number 35. I didn't mention it. The stone that smote the image became a great mountain, and it filled the whole earth. This is something that Jesus Christ's reign is going to be through the whole earth. And you see here in verse number 37, thou art a king of kings, for the God of heaven. Now, once again, he's turning the light on for Nebuchadnezzar. He already said in verse number 28, there is a God in heaven that can answer his prayers and answer his requests. And in verse number 37, he gives God the glory for Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. Now, world emperors don't like anybody else getting the glory but themselves. But Daniel has just stepped up and he's answered the dream. Nebuchadnezzar is going to listen to whatever Daniel has to say right now because no one else could do it. He is impressed. This man has something special about him. And what does Daniel do? He talks about his God. For the God of heaven hath given thee, talking to Nebuchadnezzar, look, he's the one that's given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And then we see the beginning of the discussion of his kingdom in verse number 38. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thy hand. You say, how do you know he was a world emperor? Well, what does it say here? The children of men dwell, wherever they dwell, the beasts of the field, the fowls of the heaven have given he given into thine hand. He's talking about Nebuchadnezzar. He's given them the world and hath made thee ruler over them all. And then he begins to describe here in verse number 38. The image, thou art this head of gold. You can imagine that's probably a pretty good thing there. He's probably putting his shoulders back. I'm the head of gold. And here's the thing is, once again, he's afraid of this image. He's a very supernatural man. He saw that this stone came and destroyed this whole image. He's a world emperor. He knows that there's going to be other people someday that's going to try to take him over. No one usually likes to be in slavery. No one usually likes to have somebody ruling over them. And he thought that this vision could have been something describing what was going to happen, but he didn't understand it was going to be many, many years later. And we see here that if he would just read Jeremiah, which I know he wouldn't have, that it talked about how he was going to reign and his sons was going to reign and his son's sons, and that's when it was going to end. But that's another portion there. And it talks about here that he's the head of gold. And in verse 39, after thee arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear the rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom, and you see here, so he's saying, look, the head of gold means one thing. The arms and the chest area, they represent something else. It's a different piece of metal. It's silver. Then you got the stomach and the legs that represent the brass, which represents a different world empire. And then you got the iron and the feet that has a meaning that goes towards another empire. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as the iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as the iron that breaketh all pieces shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas, and you see in this fourth kingdom they're describing, because it's referring to the Roman Empire here, and we'll get to that in a second. In verse 41, and whereas thou sawest the feet and toes and parts of the potter's clays and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were a part of the iron and part of the clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. So we see here that we got the we got the thing. We got the head here. I know you imagine it's bigger image. Head of gold. That's Babylon. And you'll see that it says in verse number 39 that after Babylon, there's going to arise another kingdom. It's going to be an inferior kingdom. And you see how it breaks down. You can think about the inferior. And, you know, if I had a rock of gold and I had a rock of silver and I asked you, which one would you want? You're going to take the gold because that's more valuable. And you think about, even when you think about these different things, the heaviness too. It's not just, does not only go gold and does not go because the value of the gold, silver, brass, iron, and clay, but you also see the heaviness of it, the gold, the silver, you know, the brass, the iron, and the clay. You also see the importance of it. No offense, but most people would think their head's more important than their feet. Because of the fact that, you know, you don't cover your head up, you cover your feet up. And there's a reason for that, because they stink sometimes. But it's something that's not really going around showing people. I guess some ladies do put makeup on their feet when they're talking about their toenails. But, you know, you put more work on that's more of an important thing, and it works its way down. It's showing you that these other nations were inferior. The first one was the head, the gold, which represent the Babylonian Empire. And the chest and the arm of silver represents the Medes and Persians. And where do you hear about that? You go down a couple more chapters over when the Medes and Persians actually invade Babylon. Daniel predicts it before it ever happens. And that represents the second king. It's an inferior kingdom. And you got the belly and the thighs, which is the Greeks, which was even a more inferior kingdom than the Medes and Persians and the rules that it had and the way that they ruled the nations and ruled the world. Then you got iron. Iron's the interesting one. You can see the description that are given there. It talks about Rome. It talks about the might and power of Rome. And it even deals with this present day, how the Roman government, after it was broken into two different things, I think it was the East and West, and then as it has gone down, it's become to where it's even divided again. And where a lot of people get the things of today and the different nations that we have today is the rule that Rome had before. Now, there was people who tried to become emperors, like Nebuchadnezzar. You know, you got Napoleon who tried to conquer the world. You got Hitler who tried to conquer the world. But there was no other world emperor. This iron represents all the way even till today. Remember, the time of the Gentiles is. And that's what he's describing here. He's telling Nebuchadnezzar ahead of time. He's showing this vision to the Gentile. He says, look, it starts with you. And it ended with Jerusalem, the days of the Jews, or whatever the hell you want to describe it. At that time period, that dispensation ended there, and now it's starting here, and it goes all the way. And here's the description that it gives here in this passage of Scripture. It goes all the way till Jesus Christ comes. So you see here, there is four different kingdoms that's represented inside of this, but it still works today. And that's when you get the clay and you get the toes that are mixed into there because of the fact you see it's not as strong. And the kingdom, you see in verse number 41, the kingdom shall be divided. You notice that no one really conquered Rome. Rome conquered itself. If you go back in history, it was an inward conquered nation. Little by little, it was divided. Nobody ever got to be a world emperor ever again. Now, I think there's some people out there that think they're going to become a world emperor today. And don't worry, I won't talk about our president. But the world emperor, you know, there are people out there who try to rule the world, and it just never happened because it wasn't in this thing. The next person is going to be the Antichrist. Yes, the next person is going to be the Antichrist that comes on the scene. And here, you see in verse number 44, "And the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom." Now, see where it comes is in the days of these kings. What kings? Is referring to the kingdoms that have been divided, talking about the representation of the toes. As the toes of the feet in verse number 42 were part of iron and part of clay, talking about not the strength, because you get the clay and the iron mixed together, it's not as strong. And it says, "So the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not clave one to another." In the meaning that they're going to work together, but they're not going to join together to become one world emperor, one world kingdom, even as iron is not mixed with clay. In the days of these kings, referring to the ten toes and referring to the clay, in the days of these kings, shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom. Remember, this is what God has in store for us. This is the good stuff, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Now, you know, that's so talking about the what they have in store here. Now, remember, this time period is giving us a time period where it's talking about all the way through the tribulation. It's talking about the second coming. You got to think of the prophetic calendar we have. We have what's the next event? It's the rapture. When the rapture comes and the church is taken out, then what does Jesus do? He turns back to the Jews to be the light. You know, you think about the two witnesses that are going to be out there during the tribulation time. Who are they going to be? They're going to be Jews. You think about the 144,000 that Jesus turns to. Now, I'm sorry to the Jehovah's Witnesses around, but there are Jews. They're from the tribes of Israel. And that's, you know, once again, you're going from the time of the Gentiles is something that works until second coming. The fullness of the Gentiles, which it mentions in Romans 11:25, is in reference to the spiritual state, and that's the bride of Christ. And when the rapture happens, it takes the bride out and takes the light out of the world, and it takes out the opportunity for the Gentiles to be the witness then. So he turns back to the Jews. Can a Jew be saved? Yes. Can a Jew be a witness? Yes. Just like a Gentile could have been saved in the Old Testament, but it's more Gentiles today that are spreading the light than the Jews, because what did the Jews do? They rejected the Messiah. They crucified the Messiah. And that's when during the times of the Gentiles. So the fullness of the Gentiles come, and you have the rapture. What do you have next? You have the seven-year tribulation period. We believe that the rapture is before the tribulation period, and that's what we teach here. And you have 3.5 years. You got the Antichrist, the devil Superman, comes on the scene. And he makes a pact with Israel, the Jews. He makes a pact with all the other enemies, and they join together. They build the temple, and for 3.5 years, they had this treaty, this peace treaty. And then after 3.5 years, he breaks his commitment. He breaks his pact with Israel. He goes and defiles the most holy of holies. He sits on the throne of David. And then that is when all the other nations turn against Israel. And that's when everything breaks loose. But you say, where does it have to do with this? Well, it has to do with showing you that Jesus Christ, at the end of the tribulation, at the end of the seven-year period, he is the stone that will come and conquer any and all nations that ever existed. It will only be him. And you'll see here that at the end of this is the second coming. There's a difference between the rapture and there's a difference between the second coming. And I'm not trying to be super deep with you. I'm just trying to give you an overview here. Wait till you get to chapter 7 and 8, and wait till you get to that they have different representations of different animals that represent these different kingdoms. And it gets even a little bit deeper. But I want you to understand here tonight, God is in control. And that, you know, we see everything that's going on. Daniel is overwhelmed, I'm sure, being in this land, but he trusts God, and God uses him, and God helps him. Look at verse number 45, and we'll finish up. For as much as thou sawest the stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands, that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel is telling him, look, God's told you to dream. No one else could do that. Now the interpretation of it, it's sure. You can trust it. What do we learn there? God is worthy of our faith. You know, you can't count on anything else. You can't count on anyone else completely and fully, but you can count on the foreknowledge of God. You can count on the strength and power of God because of the fact that we know that his plan is working together. You see all this happen. The amazing thing is, this is not a history book that was written after all this happened. This happened and was written beforehand. And it was written, and we can trust him because he's got some great things planned for us. Stop worrying. Stop thinking, saying, where is God in all this? There's been people that have been through a lot worse than we have. And I'm trying to make it seem like our issues and our problems are small and they're insignificant. But what our nation is going through today, we haven't been carried away over to a place like Babylon yet. We haven't been all these other things. We can make up lots of different things. There's been other people, the Jewish nation, the Jews during the Holocaust, the other nations in slavery. I mean, you think about people who are in communist China today that are Christians having an underground church. You know, we like to make victims of ourselves. We like to feel sorry for ourselves. And there's nothing wrong with casting our cares before the Lord. He tells us to. Nothing wrong because things impact us and make it personal. I get that. I understand that. I'm not minimizing it. But what I am telling you, God is in control. And he is worthy of our faith. And he has great things planned for us. And when you see here with Nebuchadnezzar, he said, look, Nebuchadnezzar, God made this for you. And guess what? You are the gold. You are the cream of the crop until the stone comes. And that's why you hear me say the most powerful man to ever live is because he was the head of gold. I think he probably ruled the most of the world, the most known world, as we see here in verse number 38. He was the biggest and the best, but he's nothing compared to Jesus. And when we think of this world that we live in today, there are a lot of people out there who think they're the biggest and best. But there is a stone coming someday that will put all others to shame. And that's what we've got to remember. Remember, first of all, God is in control. We think of his foreknowledge. He knows everything that's going on. We think of his power. He's able to do whatever he pleases, we read earlier. But also remember, God is worthy of our faith. There are a lot of things that we cannot trust in today. I don't really trust too many politicians. To be honest with you, I don't trust too many salespeople. be honest with you, I don't trust... Oh, we won't go there. But there is a lot of things that we can't trust today, that we can't put our faith in. But there is somebody who's worthy of our faith. And that's God. And that's what we need to put our faith and trust in. And last but not least, God has something special planned. Our 80 years here, 90 years here, or 50 years here, however old we're going to be, it's not our final resting home. This is just something we're passing through. And we got to realize, if a God can tell this Gentile king this hundreds of years before it ever happens, boy, we serve a great God. Remember, there is a God in heaven that can do anything. And I want to encourage you tonight as we go through the book of Daniel to remember this and understand this. Next week, we're going to see how Nebuchadnezzar reacts to it. Does he fall before Daniel? He does fall before Daniel. He praises Daniel. He praises Daniel's God. But he never comes into a personal relationship. So what does he do in chapter 3? He builds himself a great big image. He doesn't turn to God. He doesn't look to God and say, God, thank you for... What does he do? He builds a great big image. And we're going to see what happens there. And we're going to see his foolishness next week. Let's go ahead and look to the Lord in word of prayer.